That was a good thing. Try again. That's it. It's on. Okay, I'm following on from what I was talking about last time, and the idea of revealing God. Last time we spoke and said that God wants people to know him. He wants to be revealed. He does that through his word. He does that through his acts. He does that through, so very clearly through, Jesus. Jesus said when the disciples were talking to him, he says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But God also wants to reveal himself through his church. He wants to reveal his character through his church. He wants us to embody his character and be living demonstrations of what he's like. And as a sort of a launch point, I really want to take a couple of verses out of Exodus. Exodus chapter 34, verses 6 to 7. Exodus chapter 34. I'm just looking at those verses there, 6 and 7. The background to this is that Moses was leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. They got into the desert, they crossed the Red Sea, and Moses says to God, I'd like to be able to see you, please. And God says, well, you can't do that because nobody can see me and live. But what I will do is you can go in the rock, I'll cover you with my hand, I'll pass by, and I'll proclaim who I am, and you'll see the back part of me. And in Exodus 34, 6 to 7, this is what it says. The Lord passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generations. Slightly different version in the English Standard Version. It says that at the start in verse 6. The Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Some versions translate it as merciful in that first section. Some translate it as compassionate. It's the Hebrew word rakum. It means to be full of compassion and hence merciful. So that's why you get the two translations there. And it's taken from a root which means to have mercy on or show compassion towards someone. And the idea is to be moved with deep feeling. To consider a situation, a person, a circumstance or whatever, and to be moved. You know, we can see situations on the TV, disasters, as Roger was praying earlier on. We can see wars. We can see situations that are absolutely atrocious. And as the scene changes, we've lost it. There are other times when you will see something and it will grip you. You will see it and you will not forget. You will see it and you will be moved inside. And that's what this is talking about. That real internal grasp of the pain, a real appreciation of the circumstances that people or person or whatever are in and are going through. But not just to leave it there, not just to be moved inside, but to actually do something about it, to be motivated by it, to be energized by it, to be compelled by it to do something, to step into a situation and attempt to change it. And that's what this is talking about. God is a God who is like that. He is merciful. He is compassionate. It's part of his character. It's an attribute. It's what makes him who he is. God is a compassionate God. He sees a situation, is touched by it, and cannot abide to leave it as it is. In Matthew 23, verse 23, Jesus shows us the importance of mercy, speaking to the Pharisees, and he says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, the mint, the dill, the cumin, but you've neglected the more important matters of the law." He lists some things and he says, mercy. Now, when you look at the Old Testament, you look at that and you think, well, it's a book of judgment, it's a book of wrath. But Jesus says that we see mercy. We often overlook such things because we want things to be fair. We want things to be just. We want justice, particularly when we've been wronged. We see others getting more, but that's not fair. They don't deserve that. They haven't earned that. Look what they've done. That's justice. But Jesus said in the Old Testament, we also see mercy. God gives us what we need in our situations. And one of the things we desperately need is mercy. We desperately don't need things to be fair. We desperately don't need judgment. In Psalm 34, verse 8, at the very start of it, it says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." It says, you know, chew on this. Consider this. Mull this over. Cogitate, whatever word you like to put there. It's, you know, grab hold of this and just pass it around. Think about it. Ponder it. God is good. And we need to experience, we need to taste the goodness of God. And so often we do that through His mercy. We need to experience His mercy. We need to taste His mercy. We need to savour His mercy. So what is His mercy like? Matthew 18, verses 23 to 27, Jesus says this, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. He said, 'Be patient with me,' he begged, 'and I will pay back everything.' The servant's master took pity on him, cancelled the debt, and let him go." He took pity on him. The Greek word that's used there is splachnoi, and it's the idea of being moved with compassion. Sounds just like what we're talking about before. The idea of a deep-seated internal grasp of the situation. He had pity on him. He looked at him and he considered what was going to happen as a result of the orders that he's given, and he's moved inside. Gripped by the situation, gripped by this man's circumstances, and then he acts. Luke 15, 11 to 24, talking about the prodigal son. Jesus says that, you know, the young son came, asked for the division of property, got what was his, and took off. Wasted it. Came to his senses, turned around and said, "I'm going home." While he was still a long way off, the father saw him, sort of slowly put his coat on, thought, "He's coming home. I'm going to sort him out." No, he didn't do that. It says he ran. He saw him coming and he ran. The son had prepared the speech. The father just brushed it aside. Said to the servants, "Quick, bring the best robe, put it on him. Put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf, kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. The father had mercy on the son. The father had compassion on the son. The father was moved inside at the son's circumstances and acted. He was waiting to show mercy. It says he was looking. It wasn't a case of you're going to get what's coming to you. It's a case of you're not going to get what's coming to you. So what's God's mercy like? With these two examples, Jesus is trying to show us that the mercy of God is lavish. It's not just enough. You know, sometimes if you're in a hotel or whatever, and you get these sort of little packets of the condiments in the morning, I don't know if you're like me, but you sort of get your knife and you're trying to get right round into the corner because you know that one isn't enough, yeah? And they seem to give you the tiny amount. That's not like God. You know, the toast comes and God says, "Here, there's a bucket, dip in." Yeah? His mercy, his compassion is lavish. There's no shortfall. It's not a case of, oh, we'll eke it out. It's a case of, it's here. In the passage in Matthew, it says he owed 10,000 bags of gold. I haven't got any gold. Even the sort of gold-looking pound coins aren't really gold, are they? But this guy who owned 10,000 bags, there's no chance. Give me a chance and I'll pay it back. No, you won't. The master, the king, is moved with compassion, feels it inside, acts and says, forget the lot. The father who divided his property between the sons, obviously the older son would get a larger proportion, but he lost a considerable amount of his wealth, his property, his goods, and it was like it never existed. Because when the son came back, he ran to him and expressed his mercy. He showed his compassion. And in John 3, it says, God gave his son. Because you see, mercy might be free to the one who receives it, but to the one who shows it, it costs. And it's the total turnaround. The one who owes, owes nothing. And the one to whom the debt is owed, pays it. Mercy is not free. Mercy is not fair. Mercy is not just. We have debts cancelled. We get away scot-free. It's just wiped out and never talked about again. The one who owes pays nothing. The one who is owed pays it all. And God calls us to reveal his mercy. We need to realize what we have, what we've been given. We need to taste it. We need to savor it. And we need to appreciate it. You know, I'm told, because I don't know myself, but there are wine tasters who can taste the wine and they will tell you what sort of grape it was. Yeah? Where it came from. I'm told, I don't know whether I fully believe it, but they can even tell you the kind of soil it was grown in. They can tell you an area that it came from. How? They don't sort of have a quick, crafty look at the label on the bottle. It's the taste. But how many people will taste the wine and they never taste that? Because the taste has not been developed. They haven't acquired. They haven't refined their taste. And so it just passes by. It's wine. I was reading about somebody who was so into chocolate that they turned from simply a chocolate eater to a chocolatier. They're actually in the business of making chocolates. And she said something out of this article that was reading that struck me. She said that the first thing she learned to do was refine her taste so she could tell the different cocoa beans. What had been done to it? What had been added to it? How it had been prepared? And she said that this took a long time to develop, but now she's got it. And she can taste and tell you about the product and everything about it simply from its taste. I'm told that there are coffee tasters who, again, can tell you the kind of bean, where it's come from, the soil it's going, you know, very much like wine. How much roast it's had, is it good roast, bad roast, etc. Because they have a refined taste. Other people, yeah, it's coffee. Like me. Yeah, it's coffee, yeah. It's strong, it's weak, you know. Yeah, it's milky, yeah. It's latte. Oh, I can tell the difference there. But you understand what I'm saying? There are people who have refined their taste so they can tell what they are taking in and they can tell you about it. And God says, taste and see, mull, consider. Refine your taste. What are you experiencing in this mercy, in this compassion? Do you recognize it? Or does it just flow past you? We need a sensitive taste for mercy. The servant that we spoke about in Matthew 18 didn't appreciate what he'd had. He tasted mercy. And what did he give back? It says this. He saw a fellow who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him, began to choke him and said, pay back what you owe. The guy says, be patient with me, I'll repay the debt. He refused. He did not pass on the mercy that he had obtained. And Jesus draws the difference between the huge debt that he had and the small debt that the other guy had towards him. There was no appreciation for what he had received, the life-changing thing that he had received. He was destined to lose everything, absolutely everything, his family, all he had, and yet that debt was cancelled. We need to savour the mercy that God gives us. We need to taste, to mull over and consider what God has done for us, and then to feed that on. Because you see, in mercy, our old debt is cancelled, but a new debt is created. The debt is to live out and to exhibit and to show forth what we have received. A guy at work one time was telling me about a journey he had. He says, oh, it was horrendous, the traffic. He says there were queues everywhere. And he says, I was coming down this main road and it was stop, start all the way. You'd move a few feet, then you'd come to a halt. And there were side roads trying to come in and everything else. He says he got to this road on his left and he could see the huge pile of cars waiting to come on. So he flashed his lights and they let one guy out and on they moved. He says, do you know, he says, that was the worst thing I've ever done. He says, every single road that we came to, says the guy in front, flash somebody and let them out. He says, I was even further behind because I've let him out because he was so grateful. He was letting everybody else out as well. He was showing how we are meant to be. Yeah? We receive mercy and we pass on mercy. We receive compassion and we give compassion. God is moved within himself at our state, our plight, our situation and acts. And he says, as in the words of Jesus, go and do likewise. In Colossians 3:12-13, it says this, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion. Bear with each other, forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord has forgiven you. That word there, bear with, anekomai, actually means to pick up and carry. to lift. So, in other words, when somebody else has made a mistake, we pick up their shortfall. When somebody else has dropped the ball, we go and pick it up for them. We bear with them. But they ought to be carrying that. But that's what mercy says. I'll carry it for you. The one who has mercy, the one who is moved with compassion, carries the weight of another's burden. We need to show others what we have been shown. James 2:13 says this, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful, mercy triumphs over judgment. Now, it's not a contest. It doesn't mean there's a fight. Judgment's there and mercy's there and mercy sort of gets the knockdown blow and puts judgment down. What it means is this. Triumph in the idea of glories over, rejoices over, exults over. It's not a grudging sort of, oh, go on then. It's a case of, you're free. Yes! Result. But that's not right. But that is mercy. We could make you pay, but we're going to let you off. And that is what we pass on to others in the company of believers, but also unbelievers too. We delight in another's release, return, restoration. We have the Father's heart. Because like the father with the prodigal sons, he says, the debt's cancelled, now let's party and enjoy it. Mercy is top dog. God is liberal with his mercy to his own detriment, pain and suffering. When we taste, he commands us to go and do likewise, to reveal his character, to show others what God is like. When we do that, especially for unbelievers, that's when we earn the right to say, I've done this for you because God has done it for me. Let us taste God's mercy. Let's savour God's mercy. Let's appreciate God's mercy. Let's revel in God's mercy. Let us share God's mercy. Thank you.